And welcome into the Monday edition of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic, intern Hanley here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Hope everybody's doing well. Joe, how are you? What's going on?
Doing okay. Tough day yesterday.
Was a tough day yesterday. Michelle, how are you?
Doing good, guys.
We'll take your thoughts all show long on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We got a lot of stuff to get to today. But we need to start on the Mark Howard front. Just some tough news yesterday. I was walking, Joe, to do a TV hit yesterday at News 2 with our friend Corey Curtis, who we'll have on later in the show. And he opened the door, and he asked me if I heard about Mark Howard. And I said, no. What are you talking about? And then he made me aware of the report that David Beauclair put out there that Mark Howard passed away yesterday. Obviously, Mark Howard has been around here for a long time. I was talking to Davis Nolan yesterday at News 2, and he was talking about how he got here in 1981, and he thought that Howard came here around 82, 83, right after the time that he got here. Just an incredible career here in Nashville, both on television with News Channel 5 and obviously on the radio as well. Just a really sad day yesterday. I think I speak for everybody here at 102.5 The Game that our hearts go out to Mark Howard's family, especially his sons during this time. It's just an awful situation, the passing of Mark Howard yesterday. Joe, we got to know him a little bit over the course of the past, I don't know, year and a half. He did some fill-in work with us on our show. I did a couple of Titans preview shows with him last year. So he's been around here with our station as well. So that's honestly when I have gotten to know him the most. You know, growing up here in Nashville, I obviously listened to him for a long time on his show. But just a tough day yesterday, and like I said, our hearts go out to his family.
Yeah, one of the first things for me moving here, so more than 6 years ago, I mean, I quickly grew to really enjoy the morning show that he and Kevin and Frank Wycheck at the time did. I didn't really – I wasn't here for him on TV. I think he was done by then, but I know a lot of people, that's how, for years and years, obviously, he was a fixture on television. Great on radio, and then, of course, he did the Preds as well. And it's very sad, and he's one of those people who made a mark. And it's been really interesting seeing some of the tributes and just some of the comments from all kinds of different people in media around here who Mark Howard made an impact on. And it was, as you said, always fun working with him here. I think one of my favorite moments that we've ever had on the air here was the reaction to Jared freaking out at the picking of Caleb Farley. Yeah. Mark Howard's reaction to that. He made every situation better. He was encyclopedic in his knowledge of everything. He could talk about anything. And just very sad. Your heart goes out to his family and his close friends, and he'll be missed.
Yeah, one of my earlier memories of Mark, I mean, like I said, I grew up listening to his show, and I started doing stuff with the Predators when I was 18. So my first year, I was 18 years old doing stuff in the press box for the Predators. And, you know, I'm some kid out there. I even had hair at the time. It was unbelievable how much different it was and how young I was. But I remember one of the coolest things was, like, 2 months into it, Mark Howard was coming down the stairs, and he was like, "Hey, Robbie, how's it going?" And I was like, wow, Mark Howard knows my name. That's really cool. Like, I remember having that memory as an 18-year-old. Just, you know, we're blessed, I think, around here to have a lot of people that are caring like that and, you know, take time to get to know younger people, breaking into the business and all that stuff. But that always stuck out to me is, hey, that's really cool that Mark Howard has taken the time to either pay attention to my work or know who I am and stop to say hi. That was a really cool thing for me back when I was 18.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, that's, I've noticed, I mean, I've seen some stuff from Martell and Alex Doherty and different people who kind of have similar stories. He paid attention, you know, he paid attention to what was going on, not just like what was in his direct, you know, wheelhouse. So, he was just he had incredible stories too. Like when he did come in here and had done a few shows with him in here when you were gone. I think vice versa.
Yep.
You know, the stories that he has. I mean, he's got stories, and even before Nashville, stories covering baseball and things like that, and stories for miles and miles. And I just, you know, I don't know anyone who didn't like Mark Howard, who knew him, who actually knew him personally.
Well, and, you know, he could be – I think I saw somebody put it this way. I think Brandon Haggerty on Twitter put it this way yesterday. He used to work with him. He could be brash on the air at times. But that was one of the cool parts about getting to do a couple of shows with him was there were times where he and I disagreed on some topics, and it got a little spirited while we were talking about it. And then you'd get off the air, and he'd, hey, man, that was awesome. That was fun. Really enjoyed doing that. I mean, it was the ability to separate. Like it felt like he never really took himself too seriously. At the end of the day, you're talking about sports, and you're not always going to agree on sports opinions. And, you know, people get so fired up nowadays about everything, and they can't. Yeah, they let things go too personally to him, and Mark was never that way. It was always, okay, well, we disagree about sports, but I could have a normal conversation with you after. And that was really cool to do some shows with him. And he was always, when he came in here when you were out, he was always so interested in me and how I was doing, kind of adjusting to a new role here on the radio. I mean, I was still relatively new at this a few times when he came in, so he was always asking about that and giving me some advice. So things he really didn't have to do, he took time to do, which I again appreciated. So it was a real tough day yesterday. I hated to see that. And again, I just Mark Howard, the stories that keep coming out, like you said, they have a similar feel to him, which just kind of shows you the person he was. He was very intentional in what he did.
I mean, you talk about 16 years? Is that right? That they had that show?
It may have been. Yeah, I think so.
I mean, that's a run. You know, that is
very difficult to do in this business.
And I don't have it in front of me, but on television, you're talking like you said, you're talking early 80s, and you don't see that too often in any market where someone has that kind of longevity. I mean, you do, you know, here and there, you'll see that. I don't know that you'll see. I think you'll probably see it less and less, you know, as time moves forward. But that someone could have a run like that, you know, one show, one station for that long, same time slot. I mean, that's pretty rare. So, just a versatile guy too, you know. To be able to do the different things that he did. Thinking back on some of these stories, Marty Castillo. I mean, I Marty Castillo, former Tigers player, he used to hang out with him when he was in the minors. He had fascinating stories. I actually went back yesterday, and I just, like, looked at my text thread with Mark Howard, and there's just all this back and forth on, like, the Preds. You know,
Just
randomly, like, you know, hey man, what do you think about this? What should they do? Talking about Poile and moves and this and that. Just, you know, just kept engaged in the sports scene. You know, regardless of what he was doing professionally.
Well, and, you know, like you said, kind of an encyclopedia of sports knowledge. I remember just sitting with him again at Bridgestone Arena, and it would be, you know, whatever, 2 weeks before the trade deadline, and he and I would sit there and talk about, you know, what do we think the Predators are going to do this year? What's David Poile looking at? Just hearing his perspective was always valuable for me. And then, of course, you know, he was really involved with the Titans as well. You know, I remember, you know, David Legwan with the Predators and Mark Howard were very close during his time here. So watching those two, you know, kind of banter back and forth in the locker room. I remember, you know, he and Shea Weber got into it one time in the locker room, and Shea came back the next day and was like, Mark, I love you. I'm sorry. Sorry about all that. You know, it was funny to watch that stuff. But he always had the respect of every player in the locker room. You could tell that as kind of a young person. And again, just he never felt like he was better than anybody else. That was kind of the main thing that stood out to me. Like, just sitting there talking to me, which at the time I was a college kid. I had my own website that I was working for. It's not like I worked for any recognized publication out there, but he'd sit there 30 minutes before the game, before he had to go on TV, and pick my brain about stuff. I'd pick his brain about stuff on the ice, and it was just cool. You don't see that happen a whole lot.
Yeah, and on the Titans front, too, I know that You know, like, for example, when Jim Schwartz came back, I know Mark knew him really well going back to that time, too. So he knew it all. And, yeah, he was also known for not being afraid to ruffle feathers, you know, and having strong opinions. I mean, I definitely can recall some, you know, some heated Mark Howard, I guess, rants, you know, here and there. While, like you said, having a kind of a really like a laid back kind of approach, funny, laughed at himself. But, you know, when something got him fired up, he got fired up.
He did, no question about it. Really tough day yesterday for the city of Nashville. Rest in peace to Mark Howard. Like I said, on behalf of everybody here at 102.5 The Game, our thoughts and prayers are with his family during this time and all those who knew him well as well. We'll take your thoughts, your memories from Mark Howard all show long on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we will transition. We'll get into the Preds and kind of put a bow on their offseason. A move was made on Friday night over the weekend that we had been talking about over the course of the past couple of weeks. It just did not involve the Nashville Predators. We'll get into that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rexrow, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
He was on everybody's radar, so of course he was on our radar. But what happened in this, which has not really been talked about, is that he chose where to go and play, meaning he picked three or four teams. I think that was the most, and that's all his agent would give Calgary. So when I called Calgary, he told me that he would have loved to have more teams, and he'd love to talk to me about it. But why waste his time where the player was not going to go to that team? So that's how it played out.
Okay, so you guys weren't on that list.
We were not on that list.
That was David Poile, Nashville Predators general manager, talking with Chris Harris from WSMV the other night at the Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame banquet and bringing up the Matthew Tkachuk situation there. Matthew Tkachuk traded late Friday night to the Florida Panthers and signing an 8-year extension as well with the trade. So Matthew Tkachuk heading to Florida, and Chris Harris caught up with David Poile the next day and talked about how apparently the Predators were not on the list. It has since come out in the reporting that the list, I guess, submitted to Calgary ended up being pretty short. So there's not 100% confirmation on the list, but Jeremy Rutherford talked to both Brady Tkachuk and Matthew Tkachuk at theathletic.com, and the reported list is Florida, Carolina, and St. Louis. And while Matthew Tkachuk did not totally confirm that that was the list, he did say at the end of it, well, you can kind of put two and two together. So it sounds like it was Florida, Carolina, and St. Louis on the short list of teams submitted to Calgary by Matthew Tkachuk. So there's that part of it, Joe, where it doesn't sound like the Predators were on his final list in terms of the short list of teams he was looking for. And then there's the trade itself, with Jonathan Huberdeau going back to Calgary. Also, Mackenzie Weegar as well, a good defenseman at the NHL level. Prospect Cole Schwent, and a lottery-protected first-round selection in the 25 NHL draft. So, I mean, all in all, I thought Calgary did pretty good. It's a pretty good haul for Calgary. Like, when you're talking just player for player, there's not an offer the Predators could have made that really would have come anywhere close to Jonathan Huberdeau coming back the other way.
Yeah, well, so as it turns out, and you're right, you know, Jeremy has a really good in-depth piece, including some of the Blues offers, which was Tarasenko, Scandella, a high pick.
Yep. And it sounds like Calgary had no interest whatsoever in Tarasenko.
So Rutherford and Wyshynski, both on our show last week, because we were kind of operating, I know I was at first for sure, on the idea of, okay, you were a pretty good team, and then you lost 200 plus points and two forwards, so you're blowing this up a little bit, right? Well, no, those guys were right, and I think
they just got 115 points back.
Yeah,
one guy.
Yeah, I mean, it's so obviously they were. Now, we did talk about with the Blues, you know, a Kyrou, which is what the Preds didn't have. Unless the Flames were really interested in like a Duchesne or something like that, you know, but Man, that is a return. That is a return for Calgary, and they're going to be pretty good, I think, still.
Yeah, I mean,
even with all this, they got – so they're obviously – that was their priorities. Okay, we're going to get a big-time forward back then.
Yeah.
And they did.
Well, they did, and look, there's a risk that comes along with it because – you know, Jonathan Huberdeau has 1 year left on his deal. Mackenzie Weegar has 1 year left on his deal as well, which, you know, a lot of people were asking, why in the world would Florida do this? Like, why are you trading Jonathan Huberdeau? Well, number one, you just got 5 years younger in Matthew Tkachuk. And it kind of tells me, like, did they have doubts that Huberdeau was going to sign an extension with them one day? I mean, you're a year left on the contract. I think he's 29. So he is a guy that has been a phenomenal player and has grown the last couple of years into just a stud out there. So if you're Calgary, I mean, you got to try to get him extended now, which I don't know if that's going to happen or not. Based on recent track record in Calgary, my guess would be no, it's not going to happen. But again, let's say it doesn't happen and you trade Jonathan Huberdeau at the trading deadline.
Right, then
you're going to get a whole lot of stuff.
Right, you can turn him back around. And you see what you have, you see what it means, see whether maybe he warms to the idea of that. And if any of those things don't work out, yeah, you turn him right back around in February and bring in, I don't know. And then you finally then start rebuilding?
Patrick Kane,
I don't know.
Maybe you get him signed to an extension.
There you go.
I don't know. So if you're a Predators fan, do you feel better knowing what the trade package was? Because I saw a lot of Predators fans upset that I guess they weren't on the final list for Matthew Tkachuk, but let's just say they were, and this is the type of offer that Calgary's looking for. I don't think the Predators have an offer that competes with that. So do you feel better about that if you're a Predators fan, knowing that you didn't really have a Jonathan Huberdeau-type player to offer up to Calgary, and that if that was going to be the comparison, you probably weren't getting him anyway, according to reporting out there?
Well, I think you still you feel – you can't unsee or unknow that, like, he was that you had this rare opportunity. And also, look, and Jeremy Rutherford said this to us on the show. He said that in the last year, Nashville was mentioned. So there was, it wasn't just like, I don't know. I mean, there was some interest apparently
right.
in Nashville. So that makes it, you know, obviously that's where the frenzy came from late last week. But between the return that I don't think the Preds could have matched, if they were absolutely resolved to be like, no, we are getting a comparable player. I mean, there's very few teams that could provide that or, you know, could had the guy and then also would be willing to part with the guy. And then the fact that he's not on this apparent final list, at least, like, you certainly can't come away from this and blame David Poile on this one, right?
No.
I mean,
just kind of, it's the way it shakes
out
sometimes.
You may want to, but you really shouldn't.
Well, and the silver lining is he didn't end up on St. Louis or Dallas. He ended up in the Eastern Conference.
Right.
So he's now with, you know, a team that's not in your division. Now, the bad part is Jonathan Huberdeau is now in the Western Conference, but at least he's not in your division. So the idea of your division rivals in the Blues or the Stars or somebody of that ilk getting significantly better with a Matthew Tkachuk coming in, at least you don't have to deal with that if you're the Predators. But it was fun to think about. I think he would have been the perfect fit there in Nashville.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing, too, is it was like you got to get him, but also you got to get him because of who is going to get him. I was convinced it was going to be St. Louis just because it made too much sense, and it's like you have that little extra sweetener of going back home and all that stuff. So,
well, it sounds like, according to Rutherford's article he put out there, that there was some interest in that, too, from
sure.
Matthew Tkachuk's side of things.
So, in the end, yeah, you don't have to deal with them on a regular basis, and you just you know that it wasn't going to happen. So you go back if you're the Preds, and you've had a good offseason.
Yeah,
you've like, gotten better.
That's the thing. Like that kind of to me, now that the Tkachuk move has gone on, that kind of feels like it for the offseason. I mean, you've still got Trennan that you've got to take care of, and we'll see if that gets to arbitration or if they're able to come to an agreement before then. But it kind of feels like this is the team. They got roughly $4 million in cap space right now. Let's say another $1.5 million, $2 million gets taken up by Trennan. Then you've got $2 million. A breathing room heading into the season. So if you need to make a an addition at some point, you can do it then. But it kind of feels like this is going to be the team heading into the season. And if that's the case, with Niederreiter coming in, McDonough coming in, Forsberg re-signing, how much better are they heading into this season? That's what you gotta figure out now if you're David Poile and the Predators.
Is there no chance that some kind of a trade could still be swung?
I'm not saying there's no chance. It just kind of feels like there's not one imminent. Let me put it that way. Is what it feels like.
Yeah. If this is what it is, then that means Fabbro staying around. See how he responds to probably being a third pairing defenseman. Tolvanen staying around. See how he responds to probably being on the fourth line and, you know, not having ideal opportunities. Although I would assume that Tolvanen would still be part of the second power play, even with Niederreiter probably going on it, right?
Probably.
Yeah. It's, because I still look at those two in particular as guys who could have, who could bring some value back.
Although now that I'm thinking about it, somebody's going to have to win a faceoff. And Granlund and Johansson were both on the, and Duchesne were all on the first unit last year.
That's a good point.
I don't know. Maybe we'll see.
I don't know. But Niederreiter I would think he'd be on power play too.
He will.
I mean, they've got to improve power play too.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just, those two guys in particular, guys who maybe new scenery could be good for them. Maybe someone would have still a decent level of interest in them. I don't know what the return is, but, you can continue to improve your forward group.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that they're absolutely done this offseason, but unless a trade kind of presents itself. Like, at this point, if you're David Poile, you know, what are some trade targets that would interest you out there? Or would you still be, with Niederreiter coming in, would you still be interested in an Alex Killorn of the Lightning or a Nyquist from Columbus? You know, the JT Miller, I think, is a different discussion because that's going to require a lot to go get a piece like that. But, you know, from a cap-strapped team, let's say Killorn's available and you don't have to give up a whole lot, are you interested in moving some pieces around and creating some room for a guy like that if you're David Poile? Or is Niederreiter your guy and that's just what you're going to go with in the top six and you hope Tomasino or Tolvanen comes along? I don't know. That's an interesting question. It kind of feels like, though, that's going to be what it is heading into the season.
Yeah. And if that's the case, I feel like this is a playoff team. I think this is a team that could potentially compete with St. Louis. That'd probably be like, right, that's the race for second place.
I think so.
That's probably what you're looking at.
I think a decent
chance to be third.
Yeah, I still think St. Louis, Nashville, and I would still probably have Minnesota right all there together. Dallas, I think, is a notch behind them at the moment. And then you've got Winnipeg, who I think is a notch behind Dallas. And then there's Arizona and Chicago.
And I mean, it's just, even if you're a Preds fan, And you don't love these moves and you don't think they're going to be that much better and you're angry. I mean, just think about being able to watch the Blackhawks hockey next year, you know. And it's going to warm your heart.
It's going to be quite something out there at the United Center next year. So kind of feels like maybe this is it for the Preds offseason, but we'll see if David Poile's got anything more up his sleeves as the offseason continues here. Coming up next, we'll get into the Tennessee Volunteers. On Friday, some news on the Tennessee football program front, and it was not good news. We'll get to that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezvik, intern Hanley here with you on this Monday morning. Taking your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. So, some rough news for Tennessee football. On Friday, NCAA came out with their notice of allegations, 18 violations alleged by the NCAA, almost $60,000 in illegal benefits by Tennessee football under former head football coach Jeremy Pruitt, who we've spent a lot of time talking about here on this program. Some interesting details in this, including his wife, Casey, accused of making 25 cash payments totaling about $12,500 to help a prospect's mother make her car payment. So, honestly, there's a whole lot in here, Joe, and I'll just be straight up with you. And I think mostly everybody I saw on social media the other day, including a lot of, like, Florida fans and Alabama fans, it just reads differently now that NIL's out. They're like, oh, money's being passed around. That's cool. They're helping pay for cars and rent. That's what's going on. Yeah,
it's some nails.
There's a whole lot of that was out there on Friday. But this is, I mean, as far as the NCAA is concerned, this has been an ongoing, long investigation that has now got some news to it with the Tennessee football program. So, look, I believe the term the NCAA used was exemplary cooperation by Tennessee throughout this process. So, we'll see what effect that ultimately has on, I guess, what could be coming for Tennessee football. But let's just start with the information itself. What did you make of this notice of allegations that was out there late on Friday afternoon by the NCAA to Tennessee football?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think I'm going to disagree with your characterization right off the top. I don't think this was bad, rough news for Tennessee. Now, I could eat those words because it's still an unpredictability with enforcement, even though they're transitioning toward trying, as they always should have, one of many issues with the NCAA, this tradition of making kids and coaches pay for the previous staff's sins. I mean, it's just, it's never made any sense to me, and now they have a stated purpose of getting away from that. So I think Tennessee, which has already self-imposed some scholarship reductions, I think Tennessee is going to get out of this without a postseason ban. Now, again, if I'm wrong, then I will go back and agree with you. But I think when you look at this whole thing, the fact that they did not get, they got 18 level one, which is big.
Right.
But they only got failure to monitor. They didn't get it's the phrase is eluding me. You know what I'm talking about.
I do, and it's
eluding the next
me too.
Step above failure to monitor. God.
We'll come up with that phrase here in a second.
That is so frustrating. You know exactly what I mean. What the heck is it? No, I can't move
don't
on.
Don't look at me. I don't know.
I can't move on until I get this phrase.
615-737-1025 on the text line.
I can't move on. Someone on the text line, help us out. They got failure to monitor. Failure to monitor is basically the second most overall characterization. I've used that word twice now, too, on this segment. But
lack of institutional control.
Thank you. Thank you. God. Why was that so hard? 636. Lack of institutional control. Had that happened, then okay. That opens the door for, I think, more serious penalties. But I think they're gonna I don't think they're gonna get much more here. And this is again, I just feel like this is ultimately good news. You go back to the day that Jeremy Pruitt got fired. We all knew what the deal was. We all knew that this was about not paying him his buyout. Not that there was nothing there. Clearly there's something here.
Sure.
But think about like the way it was described that day by by Randy Boyd, Dante Plowman, without being specific about how bad this stuff was. Now, again, I'm not saying this is nothing. $59,598. A lot of different things. Very brazen and sloppy and stupid. There's no doubt about it.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, and you look at this, and you go back to that press conference that day. Was this really, like, was this really crime of the century stuff?
Well, it confirms what we've known all along, and that was if Jeremy Pruitt was winning at a higher level, nobody would ever say anything about this stuff.
Right. Now, of course, 60K, that's just what they found, right? But the fact that they were able, like, they found all this stuff on their actual work phones, that might be the dumbest thing about all this. Like, that, not only are they just out doing this, and Pruitt's wife is out, here you go, here, yeah, throw it out. Like, they're just talking about this stuff openly on their work phones.
Jeez.
I mean, like, you know, people have pointed out accurately, Jeremy Pruitt worked at Alabama.
He did.
Jeremy Pruitt worked at Georgia. Jeremy Pruitt worked at Florida State. Do you think Jeremy Pruitt's just coming up with this stuff on his own? But also, do you think those places are sloppy like this? I bet you they aren't.
No.
I mean, sloppiness is ultimately his crime, and I'm with you totally on this. All of this looks so different now, but it should have looked stupid all along. All these things through time,
yeah,
through NCAA enforcement. I mean, my God, let him get a kid, you know, a brunch, a nice brunch.
Well, my favorite was this piece from SI that I believe Ross Dellinger put up, and here was the line. It said, quote, on at least two occasions, the staff bought McDonald's for prospects and their families, though the bags included just food and not cash, as was erroneously reported by Dan Patrick. Staff members did, however, buy Chick-fil-A breakfast for recruits. This is the sentence from Ross Dellinger.
McDonald's bags.
So I guess Dan Patrick wasn't totally wrong. There was McDonald's bags that were used in this. They just did not have money in them.
Yeah.
They had a McMuffin or whatever it was.
He's half right, yeah.
I thought that was real for so long when you guys would talk about it when I first moved here.
Oh, yeah.
Like, am I missing something?
That the payments in the McDonald's? I mean, it'd be amazing if it was true. On some mornings, that sausage McMuffin with egg is like, it's like gold. It's like pure gold. Thank you, Dan from Clarksville, William from Dover.
There's a lot.
And unnamed, who all came with lack of institutional control. I appreciate you guys. I don't know why that was so hard.
It was very difficult. So you don't think it's going to be a big deal for what's coming with Tennessee football? Because there were some varying degrees of opinion on that the other day in terms of what it could mean. Could they get a postseason ban? But I will say pretty much everybody agreed that at the grand scheme of things, especially with the position the NCAA is in right now, maybe not as big a deal as people thought it could be with Tennessee football.
The only thing that I will – I think this all adds up to no postseason ban. But the only two things. One, like I already said, it's unpredictable. They make no sense. There's no consistency. So they do random stuff where they pop someone really hard, and you're like, "But wait, but then look at this case. How did you come to this conclusion when on the other case you were way softer?" Also, just the Tennessee – remember these threats about NIL and someone's going to be made an example of and all this stuff. Tennessee would be a prime candidate for that. Although, again, I think that's complete garbage, certainly to retroactively try to punish someone when we all know there's no regulation whatsoever of this stuff. How could you possibly try to go back and retroactively punish someone? I don't think you can. I'm just saying because of that, would someone in there be like, yeah, well, we need to be a little tougher on Tennessee here? I don't think so. And if it did happen, to me, it would be inexcusable. There's just no – with all the things that we are getting rid of that are stupid about the NCAA, why you would look at a situation like this and then say, yeah, these current kids on the Tennessee roster need to go ahead and not play in a bowl game. It was always infuriating, but now I feel like it's like, how could you even begin to go there? So that's how I feel about it. That's how I think. That's what I think will happen. There's always a little wiggle room for the NCAA to be incredibly stupid.
Jeremy Pruitt did issue a response to ESPN. I think Chris Lowe was the one that put this out there. Quote, A lot of this information in the NCAA's report I'm seeing for the first time and still reading through it. I'd rather not comment a whole lot past that, other than to say I'm looking forward to telling my side of the story somewhere down the road, end quote, from Jeremy Pruitt.
Well, I can't wait for that.
I can't either.
So the one of the questions now, of course, is, you know, Tennessee got out of the $12.6 million buyout, and the way it's written in his contract, I mean, it's serious NCAA violations. I mean, you got 18 level one violations. So he doesn't have a lot of a leg to stand on here. But I still wouldn't be surprised if there's some kind of a settlement. Some kind of a settlement. I'd be interested to know what the number is. I don't think it's going to be very big.
No, he's too busy telling Blake Topmeyer where that first down marker was. He's got the not text on his work phone. Just pick up another phone, man. Get your burner.
Incredible. So does this seriously harm Jeremy Pruitt's chances of coaching in college football again?
You talking like position coach?
Yeah. I mean, anything.
I don't know. That's an interesting question. Like, I don't think anybody's going to pick him up here in the near future, but eventually this will be behind him and it'll go away, and I think he'll be in college football again at some point. Now, is he going to be a head coach again? Well, I don't know. I don't think he's a very good head coach, so it may have more to do with that than anything else, but you never know.
Well, not only did he prove to not be a very good head coach again, like, the bigger thing to me, I don't think people are going to be like, oh, my goodness, cheating, no, you know, clutching pearls. Right. But they're going to be like, this guy's stupid?
Yeah.
That might deter you from hiring him.
Yeah. Really, man? Put it on the work phone, huh?
Dude, really?
Yeah, pretty incredible stuff. 615-737-1025. We'll continue the discussion on Tennessee football and break down this notice of allegations coming up next. This is Robbie and Rextro, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on 1025-1063 The Game. Taking your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025, discussing the notice of allegations put forth by the NCAA with Tennessee football. So, Joe, my question to you is this. If you're Josh Heupel and Danny White, how are you feeling today? Because that was a big topic of conversation when both of them got hired, of Danny White having to come in and try to navigate through all this stuff. You know, Josh Heupel, you know, one of the first questions he was asked in his introductory press conference was, well, what do you make of kind of the NCAA cloud that's around this job right now? So now that the notice of allegations has been put forth, which, by the way, I think now that Pruitt and everybody named in this has, I think, 90 days to respond to this, and then this will probably get drug out to sometime next year before the punishment is nailed down to it. But Danny White and Josh Heupel today, how you feeling about what took place on Friday?
Yeah, I'd say it's not like, of course, they've known for a bit, right? They've got had a pretty good idea, I would think, of how this would turn out, and I'd say pretty good. And I'd say for Tennessee fans, the low point was really the day Pruitt was fired. Well, maybe for some people, the day Heupel was hired, but they're feeling pretty better. You know, better about that, I would say. But the low point and the sort of, to me, you put the bow on the whole thing going back to John Curry, Butch, Shiano, all that stuff. That was the day it was like, okay, clearly this did not go well. But I would say, you know, things are looking better now. And I think that this is not going to have some huge impact on what Heupel's trying to do. And we'll see if he can do it, but I don't think this is going to be a big hindrance. You know, the scholarship thing is it's significant. It's also like scholarships now. I mean, Heupel has made this point multiple times that last year they were very thin on the scholarship front, and you know they still had a good season. It's the 85 scholarship thing. I think for a lot of teams, like, it'll be hard in a lot of years to be there just because of the movement. You know, the player movement now almost makes it. I mean, you're seeing a lot of basketball teams now that aren't close to their, you know, 13, because so many people are like, no one wants to be the ninth person, you know, and no one wants to be a third stringer on a college football team. So unless you're a freshman, it's like, okay, but next year you'll start, you know. So even the scholarship thing, I look at it differently now given the landscape. So I'd say overall, like, again, I think it was a pretty good outcome for Tennessee. And I will say, too, I do want to say, Pat Forty, friend of the show, guy I've known a long time, respect a ton. And he had a column the other day, like, Vols fans, you know, this now you have to come to the reckoning with the Pruitt thing. It's like, that's old, man. That, like,
we got
to
stop with Schiano stuff.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. Well, and anyone still doing the, see, you could have had Schiano, by the way, Jared. Oh, I mean, that's got to be a Jared Bad Take Hall of Fame, is the whole Schiano thing. It's like, look, yes, the fans acted out that day. We've talked about it a million times. It was written about, talked about for years. Terrible. Some of the fans, terrible. Curry, it was all a disaster. Fulmer, it did not go well. Greg Schiano would not have been a good hire for Tennessee football. So, no. You know, the way people acted, some people, probably a pretty low number of people, but some people, terrible. Not wanting him to be your head coach, that's exactly what I wrote that day from the press box in Indy. This is a bad hire, and it would have been. So just move on. You know, once Fulmer got installed, Pruitt was just about as good an outcome as you could have, right?
Yeah.
Although Mel Tucker could have been,
could have been better.
But, I mean, that stuff's over. The day that Pruitt got fired, that was kind of the last time that we need to talk about that stuff, right? Now, there's a new coach, and we knew that this was coming. I thought this could have been a lot more serious. I mean, hey, I knew it was hyperbole that day. When Pruitt was fired and they're trying to get out of his buyout. But also, I've heard of some things that allegedly happened during this whole thing and got some people fired that were not in this.
Yeah.
Was there some BS in some of that? Maybe, but I thought this might be more serious.
How much of a factor do you think that Tennessee's self-reporting / what's the word, the phrase they use, exemplary cooperation? How much of a factor do you think that ultimately has in what the punishment does or doesn't look like?
Well, it's not a bad thing to have in the NOA, to have the NCAA say that about you. So that's part of why I don't think that they're going to nail them for this. And, of course, you can be cynical about that and say, oh, yeah, they cooperated because they don't want to pay the freaking buyout.
There's that.
I mean, look, you're exactly right what you said last segment. You know, if Jeremy Pruitt was going 10-2 on the regular, then a lot of these things that were found would not have been looked for in the first place, okay? But the sloppiness also is pretty amazing. Like, I just can't imagine. You know, we haven't talked about this. I think the COVID visits, because look, you know, now we're way past all that and everything. You know, we're way past that time period. And remember, you know, college football is going to happen or not. But everyone agreed, okay, the visit stuff is not happening. And there's been a couple of the programs that have been in violation of that, but Pruitt, I guess, basically was like, yep, screw that.
I'll be there.
I mean, that's, you know, when you have a special situation and it's sort of like everyone agrees, you know, that they're going to conduct themselves a certain way, maybe someone will say, oh, yeah, like tons of other programs are doing this. Maybe. Maybe they were. But this also, again, speaks to, there's a lot of things that people do that were done here that are done elsewhere. I bet you they're not done with this little care that they showed.
Well, I just his wife just handing out money left and right is hilarious.
Pretty
to
fantastic.
Me.
Just, I mean, yeah. It is pretty awesome. Let's be honest.
You know what? We got to help you pay. Hey, look, I'll be honest with you. When I saw what they found the money was going towards, I was like, okay, well, okay. You're helping somebody pay rent or medical bills? Like, it's really not that big a deal to me at the end of the day, but this is just the world that was the NCAA at the time.
And, you know, Manny Petty. Some people really like those.
Those are necessities in life, guys.
Right. Some people, there you go. Some people view
Chick-fil-A
them as,
breakfast, I mean,
as necessities.
How could you not?
Well, by the way, I tweeted about this the other day. You know, a lot of these brunches sound really good, but they went to Ruby Sunshine.
Yeah.
And that just, again, made me mad all over again about the Franklin Ruby Sunshine not having corned beef hash. I really hope the Knoxville one has corned beef hash on the menu, and I hope that was part of this. I hope that Jeremy Pruitt went down at least buying a little bit of corned beef hash.
I hope he did. I hope he enjoyed himself while he was there. I mean, people were on Friday tweeting out left and right the video of, I guess, him from his Hoover days, not knowing what asparagus was. So, you know, maybe it's just too much time on corned beef hash. He didn't know what asparagus was.
Man.
What is that?
I'm trying to imagine, like, eggs cochon with a little asparagus in there. Actually, it would probably be pretty good.
615-737-1025. Coming up next, we have finally arrived. The week of Titans training camp is here. What are some storylines that we're paying attention to heading into week one of Titans training camp? We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.